Chapter 11. Time anybody was looking. I would rather have that child than a chromo. If this tale has any object, it is to intimate that the inspired book was supernaturally able to convey a sense of its sacred and awful character to this innocent little creature without the intervention of outside aids. The magazine is not edited with high-priced discretion. The editor has a lame, and he ought to get it treated. Among other witnesses, there is one who had a umping toothache, which several times tempted her to believe that there was sensation in matter, but each time it was overcome by the power of truth. She would not allow the dentist to use cocaine, but sat there and let him punch and drill and split and crush the tooth, and tear and slash its ulcerations, and pull out the nerve, and dig out fragments of bone, and she wouldn't once confess that it hurt. And to this day she thinks it didn't, and I have not a doubt that she is 9/10 right, and that her Christian-science faith did her better service than she could have gotten out of cocaine. There is an account of a boy who got broken all up in two small bits by an accident, but said over the scientific statement of being, or some of the other incantations, and got well and sound without having suffered any real pain, and without the intrusion of a surgeon. Also, there is an account of the restoration to perfect health, in a single night, of a fatally injured horse, by the application of Christian Science. I can stand a good deal, but I recognize that the ice is getting thin here. That horse had as many as 50 claims. How could he demonstrate over them? Could he do the all good, good good, good dash gracious, liver, bones, truth, all down but 9, set them up on the other alley? Could he entwine the scientific statement of being? Now, could he? Wouldn't it give him a relapse? Let us draw the line at horses. Horses and furniture. There is plenty of other testimonies in the magazine, but these quoted samples will answer. They show the kind of trade the science is driving. Now we come back to the question, does the science kill a patient here and there and now and then? We must concede it. Does it compensate for this? I am persuaded that it can make a plausible showing in that direction. For instance, when it lays its hand upon a soldier who has suffered 30 years of helpless torture, and makes him whole in body and mind, what is the actual sum of that achievement? This, I think, that it has restored to life a subject who had essentially died 10 deaths a year for 30 years, and each of them a long and painful one. But for its interference, that man in the 3 years which have since elapsed would have essentially died 30 times more. There are thousands of young people in the land who are now ready to enter upon a lifelong death similar to that man's. Every time the science captures one of these, and secures to him lifelong immunity from imagination-manufactured disease, it may plausibly claim that in his person it has saved 300 lives. Meantime, it will kill a man every now and then. But no matter, it will still be ahead on the credit side. Note. I have received several letters, too, from educated and ostensibly intelligent persons, which contained, in substance, this protest: I don't object to men and women chancing their lives with these people, but it is a burning shame that the law should allow them to trust their helpless little children in their deadly hands. SN'T it touching? Isn't it deep? Isn't it modest? It is as if the person said, I know that to a parent his child is the core of his heart, the apple of his eye, a possession so dear, so precious that he will trust its life in no hands but those which he believes, with all his soul, to be the very best, and the very safest, but it is a burning shame that the law does not require him to come to me to ask what kind of healer I will allow him to call. The public is merely a multiplied E. M. T. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.